Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, no matter where you're listening, around the world, this is Sedona Talk Radio.
Welcome to Pandora's Box. This is Kalia, and today is Tuesday, April 7th, 2015. I'm really excited to be here today and to be presenting a new series called From Self-Loathing to Self-Loving. And this is going to be the title of a new book that I'm working on. This is a living book being written and shared each episode and will be available in book format at the end of the series. I invite you to come with me during this journey and ask questions along the way if you feel so inclined. We'll be delving into many aspects of our relationship with ourselves and the struggles we come up against. And remember that all healing begins with self-healing. I just want to take a moment too and thank everyone who comes here and listens to these shows that I do that I've been doing for many, many, many years now. I feel really blessed to be here, and I feel really blessed to have all of you who listen and who give me feedback and write in. It's very meaningful for me that my journeys, my difficulties in life have allowed me to be in this space to share, to bring this all to you. In my journey through life, I've gone through so many challenges of the mind, body, emotions, and spirit. I've gone through many initiations and dark nights of the soul that were initiations in and of themselves. I've had anorexia, bulimia. I've been raped, beaten, dragged by my hair, and verbally torn apart. I was ganged up on by many groups and suffered through many types of abuse, including verbal, emotional, physical, psychic, and narcissistic. I've been married and divorced more than once, had my son alone, raised him for 8 years as a single parent, and then lost him to his father when he moved across the ocean to Alaska. I went through a lot of physical challenges, including Lyme's disease, and emotional challenges, including depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, and suicidal ideation. There have been so many times in my life I didn't think that I would make it. I didn't think I could go on, but somehow I kept breathing and kept putting one foot in front of the other, even when my foot was too heavy to lift. I continued to face what was in front of me, and I continued to become more aware of this thing called self. At the core of every struggle was a deep self-loathing, a belief I carried within me, in the far reaches of my subconscious mind that reinforced this idea, there's something seriously wrong with me. I'm deeply inadequate. I'm not worthy of being loved or cared about. And life continued to deliver to me experience that seemed to reinforce this belief even more. Not fitting into the normal box in adulthood was a little more acceptable. I was strong in so many ways. I was smart, creative, talented, and courageous. I started my own business in holistic counseling and hypnotherapy at the age of 26. I was a natural. I could see people. I saw wounded people. I could see their pain, and I could talk to their subconscious minds. My special gifts gave me a sensation or a feeling that I was special in many ways, which compensated for the inner feelings of inadequacy. I learned to embrace my abnormal self to the best of my ability, and I went on in life, attracted mostly to other abnormals because I could understand them and I felt they could understand me. I was always drawn to the eccentrics, the musicians, the artists, and those who never quite fit into society in the normal way. We were the misfits of society. We didn't always do what was society expected of us. We rebelled against the structures that were built to contain us, and we often rebelled against each other. The pain we accumulated over our lifetime was held down beneath the surface of our awareness. We learned to manage our life in such a way that we could pat ourselves from the painful rejection and abandonment that reflected to us out of our deep-seated opinion of ourselves, our unworthiness and deservingness to have love in our lives. As I moved through life, life unfolded in divine ways that seemed to bring me closer and closer to the truth. Through my personal experiences and my work as a spiritual counselor, I began to see how many people also moved through life with this constant feeling of unworthiness at the core. The abnormals were many. We hid behind sophisticated and sometimes not so sophisticated masks that would hide our true self-opinion from the world. We pretended to be normal, at least somewhat, but we knew deep down we weren't. The older I got, the more I felt there was something much bigger than me, a deeper part of myself, connected to a deeper part of life, that continued to put me in painful situations, not so that I would suffer, but so I could learn the truth about myself. My suffering was the process of trying to keep the pain down so I wouldn't have to feel it, but it was always there, a constant gnawing in my gut, telling me something is wrong. The feeling something is wrong was easily interpreted by my belief system as something is wrong with me. I could no longer hide from the world, and I could no longer hide my pain from myself. Many years ago, I began the process of delving deeply into my pain. I stopped running from it. I stopped suppressing it. I stopped using addictive behavior and relationships to escape it. The deeper I went into my pain, the more I rooted out the belief systems that contained my self-loathing. We think of self-loathing as self-hatred, but most people I work with would not openly tell me they hated themselves. In fact, many felt that they've been pretty self-confident in their lives until something happened, like narcissistic abuse, that tore apart their illusions of themselves. When we erect illusions of our specialness, we initially pull in people who affirm it to us. But underneath, we are still fragile and can be easily pulled under by someone who, out of his or her own self-loathing, begin to attack our character. And this is what happens with narcissistic abuse. Our false beliefs about ourselves are shattered and our core beliefs rise to the surface. It's easy to believe and feel that the person who rips our illusionary world apart caused us to feel the way we do. But this isn't the truth. The truth is that person pokes and pokes at our fragile, false, or illusionary self until it shatters. One too many straws on the camel's back bring the camel to its knees. We can easily come out of such a relationship hating the one who seemingly destroyed us. But underneath our hatred of the one who has destroyed our illusionary self is a hatred of the self underneath, the self that believes it's not worth loving. One might ask, so the illusionary self-confident, successful identity I've built was never real? And the unworthy self is? Well, the truth is, neither is real. Both are illusions. Both self-opinions are built from belief systems, but the core beliefs have greater power in your life. They are your foundation for living. If your core beliefs contain ideas of yourself as unworthy, shameful, and inadequate, then your life will find a way to mirror to you these false beliefs through your life experiences. For most of us, we interpret this mirroring as evidence that we are unworthy or life has it out for us. We ask ourselves why bad things happen to good people, or we assume we're simply not good. It's easy to interpret bad things that happen to us as evidence that we are not good. It's easy to believe life is punishing us because of some core unworthiness that we carry. It's easy to see the pain we feel as punishment. If we were truly good, we would not be in pain. This is all false. Deeper truth is that we are all beautiful, innocent, and lovable beings. We're born innocent. We're born perfect, whole, and complete, regardless of the perceived defects we come in with and the dysfunctional family and society systems we grow up in. Have you ever met a baby, a newborn infant, who is not worth loving? We are all born worthy of love. It is our conditioning from the time we take our first breath, and even before that first breath, when we're in the womb, that forms our self-opinion. The more we get the message we are not okay, the more we feel at fault in life when things go wrong. We may end up being scolded for things we did not do, or even for innocent mistakes like spilling our milk. We end up getting this idea of ourselves that we are bad. We're a bad seed, and these ideas are reinforced by life circumstance. The result is, at some point in our childhood, we cut off from that bad little boy or girl and work really hard to be good. We work hard to get approval from those who shame us, believing if only those who disapprove of us the most will approve of us, we will somehow magically be transformed into a worthy person. The aspect of ourselves we cut off from, the part that believes he or she is bad, is covered up by an illusionary self, a part we can see as good. And the deeper truth is that we are neither. We are imperfect human beings who make mistakes sometimes, and we do great things sometimes, and we also have weaknesses and strengths, fears and fascinations. We are imperfectly perfect. Out of our deep sense of inadequacy, we may become the family hero, achieving high marks in school and doing everything we believe we should in order to be perceived as good. Or we may take the opposite path and struggle through school, not really investing much time or energy in trying to be good because we know we're going to fail anyway. Even if we got a good grade, it would probably be dismissed or devalued in some way, so why bother? Or we may walk the middle road somewhere in between, striving for perfection and completely rebelling against the expectations of our families and society. We might be the invisible child who is not noticed for its achievements or its failures. As we enter adulthood, we will likely continue the path we started out on, either excelling in academics and career and achieving a degree of success in society's eyes, or we might struggle with drugs, alcohol, eating disorders, learning disorders, and emotional disorders, or we find a way to do both. We either struggle against the expectations of family and society, or we try hard to meet those expectations, or we're conflicted somewhere in between. The only thing that is true across the board is that we have abandoned our true self and erected an illusionary self in its place. We're walking through life with a false belief of who we are. The false belief is either good or bad. The good news is that more and more people are now discovering the truth. They're not what they seem or have believed themselves to be. There is a quest for the authentic self, the true self. And this quest is emerging in so many of our spiritual and personal development teachings. In my work with narcissistic abuse, I have moved in the direction of the path back to self. I realized that true recovery really has nothing to do with a perceived narcissist in one's life and has everything to do with who one finds in the aftermath of destruction. When the identity is stripped away, what is left? Who is left? Often that loss of identity catapults one into a despondency and desperation that strips away his or her will to live. If I have no self, then why am I here? Along with lack of self-identity is a lack of purpose, which also leads to despondency. I have no reason to live. One is left confronting all the core beliefs that were installed in early childhood. There's something wrong with me. I'm not good enough. It's my fault. I'm ugly. I'm stupid. I'm worthless. I'm unlovable. I'm shameful. I'm dirty. I'm a troublemaker. I'm too needy. And the list goes on. Oftentimes, these beliefs we absorb or that are projected upon us aren't ours at all, but belong to our primary caregivers, our parents. The sins of the father are passed to the child. The sins of the father and the mother are the beliefs they hold in their own subconscious mind that get projected onto the child. Our parents inherit their beliefs from their parents, and so on and so forth. And society influences all core beliefs. You may end up concluding, I feel worthless because my dad always made me feel that way, and my dad made me feel that way because he felt that way. We often see our parents as God in the early stages of our lives. We know no other God. So we cannot see the weaknesses underneath the surface. We cannot understand that we're being treated the way we are because of the core beliefs our parents inherited. And since our parents are God, we assume we are the lowly worm who needs to work hard to earn scraps of approval. Ironically, this is similar to the Christian belief system that depicts God as the punishing father and his children as the lowly worms who must worship him and avoid sinning for fear of punishment. And many Christian belief systems actually teach that we are unworthy creatures born into sin and must work hard to be redeemed. These belief systems are interjected into our families, and we have little surrogate systems of God as parents and children as the inferior beings who must earn the love and approval of the parents and fear punishment or being found unworthy. Our core beliefs of unworthiness are quite common around the world. Deep down, you may feel you're the only one who feels so unworthy, but this core belief of unworthiness is global. It's societal. It's embedded in mass consciousness. It's now rising up to the surface of global consciousness to be purged and cleansed from the belief system of society. Those who are awakening to the true self, to the truth of who we are still a small percentage of the whole of society. We may be only a percentage, but there are more to follow. Some spiritual teachers tell us we are one-third of the population who are on an awakening path, and some say we've reached critical mass, and 51% of the population is now in the light of awakening consciousness. It doesn't really matter what percentage of the population is consciously evolving. What matters is that each one of us, each individual, can focus on his or her own awakening process. Each one of us must embark on that path back to self and learn how to go from self-loathing to self-loving. To live in the light of self-love is the most powerful place one can live. We must strive to reach critical mass in our own lives, where our ability to self-love reaches 51%. When we can love ourselves more than not, the self-loathing loses its power over us and slowly begins to diminish as our self-love grows stronger and stronger. So it is not that we completely eradicate any bit of self-loathing. It's that we work on loving ourselves more until we love ourselves more than not. In our dysfunctional society, we have black and white. We're either all good or all bad. We're either superior beings or inferior beings. We're either in self-doubt, fear, and negative beliefs, or we are in self-love and positive belief. Part of healing the fragmented self is to realize we, at our core, are beings of love and light, but we're struggling with some false beliefs that affect our ability to be in happiness and joy, that affect our ability to be happy, joyful beings that we're capable of being. When we can begin to recognize that all our self-loathing and self-doubt are programs installed into us by a dysfunctional society, we can stop taking these programs personally and go to work purging them from our psyche. We can look at these false programs like viruses on a computer. When our computer gets a virus, it doesn't function correctly. It's slow and sometimes it crashes altogether. We need to clean out the viruses and uninstall the faulty programs in order to get that computer functioning at optimum levels. Of course, cleaning out our negative and faulty programs involves a little more work than dealing with a computer virus. But it may be helpful to see that the virus on a computer has nothing to do with the worthiness of the computer or how good the computer is. Once those viruses and faulty programs are cleaned out, the computer can function well again. It's not the computer's fault that it has a virus. A computer runs the way it is programmed to run. We too are a product of our programming. Our programming is wrapped up in our core beliefs. Just as we may not always know our computer has a virus or is running a faulty program, we may not realize we're running negative and destructive core beliefs. As we come up against painful experiences in life, we need to start asking ourselves, what do I believe about myself right now that is feeding this pain? Our pain can reveal to us our negative core beliefs. Pain is not a bad thing, as so many of us have been led to believe. It feels bad, but changing our perspective on how we look at it and experience pain in our life can make a world of difference in our relationship with it. As we embark on the path back to self, learning to develop love and compassion for the self, we root out our faulty belief systems and our pain. The process of rooting out the pain and faulty beliefs usually involves breaking down the walls that have kept you from your pain and from the insight about the belief systems that have been running your life from the deep, dark subconscious. Sometimes those walls are plowed into by a giant wrecking ball and shattered into 1,000 pieces. It's not just Humpty Dumpty that falls apart, but the wall he sits on is annihilated. Once that wall is destroyed, there's no going back to the way it used to be. Perhaps Humpty Dumpty had to have the great fall in order to get off the fence, or rather, the wall. He needed the push to explore the terrain on the other side of the wall. The terrain he often viewed from his safe perch, but never found the courage to explore. So Nature pushed him and closed the door so he couldn't go back. Nature pushed Humpty Dumpty from the wall, knowing that all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty together again. That was the divine plan of Humpty Dumpty's life. He was not to be fixed from the outside world, but he needed to venture within and meet his true divine self. From that place, he could set out into the world in a different way. He would never be the same, but he could be better. Life has a way of pushing us towards our destiny, even if we go kicking and screaming. If we're rooted in our comfort zone, living a life that is so-so or unfulfilling, we may settle for so-so because we fear there will be nothing better than that. We believe so-so is all we will ever achieve in our life, so it's okay. Our soul connected to nature, to the divine flow of life, is compressed in our humdrum so-so existence and says, I'm going to stir things up a bit. Or our soul may completely deconstruct our current life so that we're forced to build a new one. We may be taken out of our comfort zone and into the most frightening, uncomfortable, confusing, and painful places we've ever been. It's not that our soul has it out for us. The intent of the soul is to get us in alignment with our soul's mission. At the time of our deconstruction, we often can't see the higher purpose of it all. We only see the pain, or rather, we feel it. Pain shows us where our wounds are. If you break a leg, it becomes too painful to walk on. And that pain is a good thing, because if you walked on a broken leg, it would be much worse and would not heal. Pain gives you the signal to stay off the leg and let it heal. Those who cannot feel physical pain are in danger of severe injury and even death because the warning signals are not functioning properly. Emotional pain is also a warning sign. It shows us where our inner wounds are. And if we're wise, we will give ourselves the time and space to allow those wounds to heal. We may check out of life a bit, retreat from social interaction, and go within. The important thing to understand about pain is that emotional pain is not a sign that you are bad or that there's something seriously wrong with you. Emotional pain may be showing you where you need to heal. It may be moving you towards purging emotionally through tears and emotional cathartics. It may be moving you towards leaving an unhealthy situation or taking time for yourself. When the clouds gather and it looks like rain, we may be disappointed if we're planning a hike or having an outdoor event. But most of us understand that the rain is cleansing. It clears the air and it refreshes nature. We come to see rain as a good thing in the scheme of life. Without rain, our planet could not survive. Emotional pain can feel bad, but if embraced and purged, you will feel better. As you develop a loving and nurturing relationship with yourself, you can provide the space for your own emotional healing. You can be gentle with yourself and treat yourself with care. You learn to stop judging yourself and finding fault with yourself, believing you should be somewhere other than where you are. Going from self-loathing to self-loving is a two-step process. The first step is to develop an awareness of the part of yourself that is constantly finding fault and judging those parts of ourselves we have deemed as inadequate and unworthy. As we become aware of the inner judge, we can begin to work with that part of ourselves and gently guide it in a different direction. hating our inner judge and making it the enemy is not helpful either. When we hate any part of ourselves, we're in self-loathing. To learn to love all aspects of ourselves is to be in self-loving. Even to love the part of ourselves that judges or that hates is to be in self-loving. All aspects of self are worthy of our love. All aspects of ourselves have a purpose we may not fully understand. The purpose is never to destroy us, but it may be to protect us. The inner judge who is always condemning and finding fault with you may seem hostile and unloving, but it originates out of your need to survive in the world. If you have an inner aspect that tries to point out what you're doing wrong before a parent can notice it, you will avoid punishment. The inner judge may say, "Don't be a stupid idiot and spill your milk." Maybe a parent called you a stupid idiot when you spilled your milk, and now your inner judge is trying to protect you from having that happen again. When those inner aspects take over the role of the persecutor, we're in self-loathing. We didn't mean for this to happen. It was a protective defense, but it's no longer needed. It served its time, and now it's time to liberate the inner judge from its bench and give it a new job. We don't need to fire it. We don't need to banish it or try to destroy it. We need to learn to love it into submission. We need to assign it another role. We might say to our inner judge something like this: "I no longer need you to point out everything I'm doing wrong or find fault with me. I now need you to find everything that I am doing right and find the goodness in me. Do you think you could do that?" Imagine how your life would change just by assigning your inner judge a new role. Before you can assign your inner judge another role, you must become aware of what we'll call the witness self, the watcher, or the observer. This is the aspect of ourselves that we call to attention and ask to become aware of all of our thoughts, feelings, and beliefs. We can't heal that which we are unaware of. So developing laser-sharp awareness is key to self-loving. We must learn how to step outside of our small selves and observe ourselves from a higher perspective. We must learn to watch the play from the balcony. As we develop awareness of our thoughts, feelings, and beliefs, we are in the driver's seat, and we can begin to make positive changes in our relationship with ourselves. You may learn how you are fully immersed in stinking thinking, how your thoughts are critical and destructive, how your dialogue is condescending and angry. You may discover how little trust you have in yourself. You may discover how your belief systems have set you up to fail in your work and your relationships. Because you have a belief that you're a failure, you can't do anything right, you don't deserve success. So pay attention. Discover what you really believe about yourself. The more you pay attention, the more you become aware of what is running your life from behind the scenes. Our thoughts, beliefs, and emotions are in the driver's seat of our destination. We're going to delve into each one of these drivers and learn how to make powerful shifts in awareness, and therefore getting your thoughts, beliefs, and emotions all on the same page, heading the same direction. Do you want a great relationship with yourself? This is where all relationships begin. Start here. The deeper your self-awareness, the greater your capacity for positive change. This will not be another story on how your thoughts create your reality. What I'm talking about is how that which remains hidden in your subconscious creates your reality. To become enlightened is to bring what is in your shadow to light. Until we bring to light what is in our shadow is in the driver's seat, and the destination is unclear. It is more like a driver in a minefield. It drives about dodging possible dangers and trying to avoid the triggers. When our shadow's in the driver's seat, we're usually a product of our fears rather than our conscious creation. So let's make a decision to create our lives from this day forward out of our conscious awareness rather than our unconscious fears. Let's make the decision to construct a life out of our love for self rather than our fears, and live the life we really desire to live. So this ends part one of our series, Self-Loathing to Self-Loving. If you have any questions at all and would like to call in, you can call in at 347-826-9626 and press number 1 on your keypad to alert me that you have a question. That's 347-826-9626. As a hypnotherapist, I do a process called parts therapy. And we can use parts therapy to work with the inner judge, the inner child, the saboteur, or any other part of your personality that you need to communicate with in order to get all parts of you working together in harmony toward the good of the whole. If you'd like to book a parts therapy session, please contact me through my website at pathbacktoself.com. And you can also go to Path Back to Self to find out about my books and audios and everything else. And so I don't see where anybody has a question. I thank everybody for joining me today. Hold on. We do. Area code 845.
Hi, it's Georgie.
Hi,
I love the topic.
My token caller.
Yeah. Well, I'm right up your alley, right in your wavelength, same kind of experiences and dealing with it. I don't know if it is helpful to people, but it's in the category of age-old questions of good and evil, love and hate, and for a lot of people, they haven't really realized they can make a choice between those. I want to choose good, and I want to choose the love, and then find out how to maximize that, and you give so many points. But I think until you kind of get your feet on the solid ground of you actually have the right and the power to choose, and you have the right to reject the things that would tear away at the good that you want, that was a real turning point for my own self.
And, well, that's and a really think, important point that you're making, Georgie, is that right to reject. That
yes.
I think a lot of us feel like we're being bad or we're not being loving if we reject something that's not serving us. And that's such an important point that you make. I had somebody once tell me, it was a mentor that I was working with, he says, reject the rejector, which meant that it was okay for me to reject
right.
what I felt rejected by in a lot of ways. It's okay for me to reject things that don't work for me,
mm-hmm.
ideas that don't work for me, and people that are abusive.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that begins, we begin to develop that shield and a better insight. And I like to say, I have a right to reject it for myself. They, whoever it is that I have to reject to protect myself, they have the right to go on and live their life. They don't have to answer to me, but they must not be allowed to bother me, the whole concept of being invasive and destructive. That's terrible, and if people are like that, I don't have to admit them around me. I can right. reject them. They can go ahead and live their life somewhere else. So right. I don't have to keep following them and judging them. But I have a right to build a shield and a protective zone. I think that was when I realized that and started giving myself enough credit to make those decisions, it was really helpful. So,
yeah.
I will be listening.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Georgie, and we'll hear from you again, I'm sure.
Yes, I'll be paying attention.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Join me next time. I believe I'll be broadcasting again in 2 weeks, so join me next time and have a good afternoon, evening, or morning from wherever you're listening from. Good day.